Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Tuesday, December 28th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning, back in the morning, back on a regular schedule today. So yesterday was supposed to be our back on a regular schedule day, but as fate would have it, Spectrum did not have our internet working in the studio. And Chris, come to find out, this was their excuse, which I'm not buying it, but they said the modem was old. It was an old modem. I needed a new modem. So they gave me a free new modem. But I'm sitting here like, this modem worked yesterday. Like, but now today it's too old. Like, did it age that much in one day? Like, it didn't make any sense. So I didn't get internet back running in the studio until yesterday, you know, around 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so we just scrapped the morning show yesterday. But we are back today. Here we are. Excited to get to talking about the bowl games. I mean, this is the week right here. This is the week where everything happens. The magic happens, right? We start with kind of some shitty bowl games. I know we got like Auburn, Houston today and some games like that. And then we get into some decent games starting tomorrow, then moving towards the New Year's Eve college football playoff, then the January 1 bowls, including the Rose Bowl, Utah, Ohio State. And then obviously leading up to the week-long show that is the national championship game. And I can't wait to get to that week just to talk about what that week is like, because it's really different. It's different than anything anyone is a part of in college football, because there is one game. I mean, it's not like conference championship weekend where there's five games, maybe two or three that count. Like, you are the show. You're the only teams playing. Everyone, all eyes, everyone is talking about. All that the world is focused on is your matchup in that national championship game. And it's just different, man. The media frenzy. And we maybe could do a whole episode just on the media day, like the day where you go into this warehouse and it is, it's the coolest feeling in the world. It's just like buzzing, and these little cockroaches are running around, these media members just running around everywhere. And the energy is insane. So huge week, man. I'm excited about it. Excited to see the Rose Bowl. Got a bunch of young guys that Ohio State's going to need to rely on now with a bunch of opt-outs. But before we get to it, I got to tell you, our Menace to Picks, our handicappers have been absolutely destroying it this month. It is literally going to be, it's going to double any month we've ever done. I mean, they're over 600 units already in December. I guess there's only 3 days left, but I gave them one objective: stay above 600 units. I don't care if we win any more units. It's already been insane, but they don't really listen to me. they just fire away. And I'm going to give you our MyBookie parlay of, it's actually going to be a teaser, a 7-point teaser. And the lines might have changed a little bit. We put this together last night, but we're still firing it, even if they went down a point or two. And you go to MyBookie. If you sign up a new account, now that it's the new year's coming, it's time to get into gambling. And if you're in Ohio, it just got legalized. So you need to kind of go to MyBookie, sign up, use promo code Menace, get some free money, kind of get a feel for this thing so that when it goes public and is legal in Ohio, you can start firing away with a little experience. So our MyBookie it's a parlay of the day, but it's a 7-point teaser. It's Houston +9 and Air Force +7, 280 to win 200. That's our handicapping team's teaser of the day. Really like that. I mean, Houston being an underdog to a Bo Nix-less Auburn is fucking nuts. Like, I'm probably going to fire Houston money line. Also, I know we have I don't know if you knew this, Chris, but we created a war room.
Yeah, I did know.
On Menace to Picks, and it's badass. I mean, it's like, there's probably 20 people in it right now, and it's all like high level gamblers that really, I mean, they live it. I mean, they're experts at it. And not only is our handicapping team in there, but there's some gamblers in there that are fucking unreal. Like, they post their picks, talk about their picks, and it's a way to get inside the war room. It's a little pricey, but if you're a gambler, it's worth every penny. And there's one guy in there it's like they call him the first half warrior, because he just slays these first half bets and parlays with first half money lines. And it's really cool to be a part of and watch. So if you're interested in gambling, we got a lot of that shit going on.
It's gonna be huge.
But let's talk about some stuff. Chris, how was your holiday, first of all?
Oh, dude, it was good. You know, the fam bam's back together. We kind of stayed low key, stayed healthy, you know, did the whole gift giving thing. My little brother got a pair of boxing gloves, so he's been being a demon ever since he opened those up, you know, trying to channel that that five-year-old anger. But I'm excited to get back to it, dog. I mean, we have a lot on the plate today, to be honest. Twitter's been on fire lately, man, so I'm
here. Twitter not on fire, though?
You're right. It just feels on fire with the Ohio State stuff.
It's always on fire. It's just the fire's in different places, right?
You're right. It's been very quarterback centric, kind of as of late. But I want to talk about the Rose Bowl. You know, yeah. We had the whole like speculating who's going to play, who's not going to play. It is official. Official that Olave, Haskell, Garrett Wilson, Nick Petit-Fleury are not going to play. So new era of young Buckeye Zach. What do you think? Are you surprised at all?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, I've been talking about it since
the loss to Michigan.
Yeah, the loss to Michigan, really. The one that I'm not that surprised because he still has a lot to prove was Cameron Brown. But that's basically the five that I thought would sit out. And so I batted 100% on that one. People call me crazy. And it's funny because there's this level of fandom, right, where people just can't take an intelligent take
with, on a situation,
you know, with experience and knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not just saying they're not going to play because I want them to not play, but like I say it, and there were some pretty popular Buckeyes that were like, I'm not here for any of that bullshit. The culture's different. We don't sit out. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Times have changed. Like, relax yourself. Like, I get it. Like, if you think for 1 minute Chris Olave is not like 100% cut him open, bleeds scarlet and gray Buckeye, you're nuts. Just the times have changed. There's no reason for that kid to play. It doesn't hurt the program if Ohio State loses to Utah. Like, this is a preseason game for next year. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And as much as it's disgusting to say, it's a fucking Rose Bowl, Parade of Roses, Pasadena. I mean, it is, this game is sacred, but the NCAA has made it not sacred. Like, they just have. And it's a shame because the Rose Bowl will have its day in the sun, right? When it's a part of the playoff, when it is a relevant bowl. So the Rose Bowl's not dead. It's just an exhibition when it's not a part of the playoffs. That's what it is. But I'm excited to see the young receivers play. It's going to be interesting to see who steps up outside of Jackson Smith and Jigba. Haskell, I mean, it won't be a huge loss. I mean, he is a huge loss no matter what. If he doesn't play, he's one of the best players on the team. But they have some decent interior depth. I mean, Tylenol Williams should play more than whatever four snaps that he played against Michigan or whatever that number was. So that's who I'm most excited to see on the defensive line. Is he should get a ton of reps and great reps at that, because this Utah team is a really good team. Nick Petit-Fleury, they won't do it, but I wish they would slide Paris Johnson out to left tackle just so we could get a preview of what that's going to look like, because I think he is going to be a fucking star. Yeah. But he can enjoy his right guard spot. They'll probably slide Thayer out and play Matt Jones or someone in the interior.
But if it's a preseason game, wouldn't you want to play PJ out there?
Well, the other thing is you want to send Thayer out the right way, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Thayer was a tackle for his whole mm-hmm. career.
And was a good tackle last year.
He was excellent. I mean, him and Nick Petit-Fleury were the best tackle duo in the country, and then you couldn't keep Dewan Jones off the field, so someone had to move, and he went inside. It'll also be nice to kind of get a look at instead of a four-tackle set, now a three-tackle set, and I've been honestly a huge defender of that. People have talked about that was a major error, and that's why we – maybe didn't block as well, which is complete horseshit. Like, Paris Johnson looked great at guard. Thayer played great at guard, and they didn't. There's no play they couldn't run because they had tackles at guards. I mean, Paris Johnson can pull on power. I mean, he's one of the most athletic big guys I've seen. So I'm not here for that slander. It sounds like an excuse. Like, you give up a sack, and it's like, motherfucker, fucking stud. He's playing four tackles. That's why. It's like, okay. Did you watch the clip? Like, why did it happen? Were they off levels? Doesn't matter what position you play if they're off levels. Like, don't fucking just bitch to bitch, right? But so I'm excited to see. It'll be so you want to send Thayer out the right way. You want to give him the opportunity to kind of get another game of tape at tackle, because it's going to increase his stock if he plays well, obviously. And then there's plenty of time to get Paris outside. I mean, he's going to have you also don't want to really do that to Paris. I mean, the kid has been playing right guard all year long. There's a comfort level there. And though he is a tackle talent, you don't want to throw him out there in a Rose Bowl game with, you know, minimal preparation and say, all right, now go play left tackle, big guy. And then all of a sudden he gets, I mean, you don't understand how fragile that position is. I mean, you give up a couple sacks. I mean, you watch it with Isaiah Prince in that Penn State game. You give up a sack or two, you start panicking, your whole career trajectory can change. So you want to make sure he's prepared and ready for it, because you don't want to, you know, screw his future up. So you let him stay in his comfort zone at right guard and give him all offseason to get ready to be the left tackle or right tackle if they move DeJuan, either way, at Ohio State. And so excited to watch it. Excited to see how CJ Stroud responds from kind of the media scrutiny, and now he's a villain because he's on bully mode because he finished fourth in the Heisman when I don't think he even should have been there, but apparently he feels disrespected. But kids got to bounce back, right? And we got to get a little chip on our shoulder. He's back out in Cali. It's going to be exciting to watch. But I will remind everyone, this Utah team beat Oregon twice. Oregon beat Ohio State in the Horseshoe. I know it was a very different Oregon team, but make no mistake about it now. This is going to be a dogfight for Ohio State. This is not going to be like some bounce back, like pissed off for greatness, like twice as talented. Like, this Utah team is good. They're
This isn't going to be like that Washington team, Urban's last year.
No, it's a different. You're dealing with a different culture at Utah. You just are. And I mean, Ohio State is more talented. And I think today's show, I got to figure out if I'm going to do the college football playoffs or just the Rose Bowl. I think I'll do the Rose Bowl in today's main show, and really break down the analytics of it. But it's going to be a dogfight, and I'm excited to watch it.
Of the receivers, I'm really curious to see kind of who I expect it to be. Fleming, obviously starting outside, and then who the other starting receiver is going to be. Obviously, it could be Emeka, it could be Marvin. And then kind of carrying on to next year, I am curious about how the receivers are going to look. This year, I think the three receivers were so talented that maybe you can get away with rotating less. But next year, you would think that the receivers, there's not going to be as big of a gap from the starters to the backups, because, you know, one of the guys, either if it's Emeka, if it's Marvin, or if it's Fleming, they're all going to play a significant amount. I am curious, though, to see what they do with Jackson Smith and Jigba in this game, if they move him all over the place and see if he can do some of the things that Garrett did, or if they will leave him primarily in the slot and have Fleming outside and then, you know, one of the other two young guys outside. I am really curious to see, what do you expect from these young receivers? Who do you think will be the best of the three that weren't starters this year?
Well, so I think obviously Jackson Smith and Jigba is special, right? And the question is, can he kind of play outside? I like Emeka Egbuka in the slot. I really do. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to make that the plan, right? Is Emeka Egbuka going to be in the slot, and then you have Julian and Jackson Smith and Jigba outside? Or, I mean, ultimately, do you want to do that to JSN? I mean, he's been dominant in the slot. He was the most productive receiver on the roster. He led the team in catches. I mean, he did everything. He was all everything. And so do you want to take him out of that role that he was so dominant in? And that's really, he has a skill set. I don't know if he has the long speed to play outside. I mean, Garrett and Chris can really run. I mean, they can really run. And Jackson Smith and Jigba is not that speed guy. That'll be his main focus this offseason with Mickey Marotti, will be trying to increase his speed. But you can't, and it'd be like KJ Hill. KJ Hill was, and honestly, Jackson Smith and Jigba just reminds me of a little more athletic, I don't even know if you say better. He's not better, but just he was a little more athletic, maybe a little more explosive than KJ Hill. And KJ Hill was the ideal slot. You could have played KJ outside, but he was never going to be that take the top off the coverage type of receiver. He's just one of the most efficient and productive kind of possession receivers that Ohio State's seen. And I think Jackson Smith and Jigba is poised to be that 2.0 KJ Hill. And so I don't know that I would move him. And so Marvin Harrison Jr. obviously is a long, freaky frame. I mean, just a very talented kid. But there's a lot of unknown. Julian Fleming, there's a lot of unknown. I mean, he hasn't really done much either, and he's played more than the other kids. But this is the cool part about it, right? As opposed to a veteran-laden group that Brian Hartline had, where they would have went into this game, it would have been tough. I mean, I've been there. We played in the Fiesta Bowl in 2015 with Michael Thomas, Braxton Miller, Jalen Marshall. I mean, all these guys that have played 8 billion snaps. And you get in a game that doesn't matter as much, and I don't care what you say, it doesn't matter as much, with kids that are vets. They're all going to go to the NFL. They're all kind of...
they've all played in a natty.
Yeah, and they're looking past this game, and it was hard. I mean, it was one of the hardest things of my career was to hold those meetings, because those kids are checked out. And they were pros, right? They were professionals. Like, we had a great culture in my room. Like, we had a great relationship. They were extremely well-coached at that point. I mean, Michael Thomas had been coached for, what, 3 years, 4 years, extremely hard. That we got to that point, there wasn't a lot that I needed to teach him outside of just, you know, teaching him concepts and giving him little tiny pointers. And so having an hour and 15 minute meeting every day for a game that these kids kind of were checked out on, when they're that veteran and that that just that far along in their career, it was tough. It was tough to keep their attention. I had to be creative about how to do that. And then you throw Braxton into the mix. He was a two-time silver football winner, like just answer all everything. He was one of my favorite players I've coached, but it was hard to coach him because he was so kind of in his own celebrity at times. And so it's going to be cool for Brian Hartline, one, because he's got some work to do. And two, he's going to have a hungry ass group. Like, these kids are looking at him like, oh shit, like, this is my time and this is my opportunity. And they're going to be so locked in. There's going to be nobody checked out in that room. Everyone's going to be just like frothing at the mouth because they don't have to watch Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson dominate. They get to play. Like, they're going to be on the field for 50 snaps, yeah. Right?
And going so against just, Clark Phillips, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome.
It is. And it's cool for Brian Hartline. I mean, I know everyone else looks at it like, oh, I can't wait to see this guy play or this guy play. I'm looking at it, obviously, from the lens that I lived forever. And Coach Brian Hartline has a very different task than if those two kids came back. And he's going to have a hungry-ass group, man. And his meetings are going to be unbelievable. I can guarantee it. They're going to be so locked in, so dialed in. And they got C.J. Stroud, who's obviously had an exceptional year, Travion Henderson, and the guy that I'm excited to watch, honestly, who I think could have a breakout game, is Jeremy Rucker.
Ruck, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he absolutely could, because with those other guys, I mean, he's going to be the kind of the comfort and familiarity. I mean, he should have a breakout game. He should have plenty of opportunities. But I want to circle back to the receivers, because I think it's interesting, kind of Ohio State, you know, Buckeye Nation, how they feel about Emeka, about him, maybe him coming into the slot and then moving Jackson outside. I think Jackson is just fine in the slot, and I would keep him there because I worry about his deep speed. And, you know, whose explosive speed I don't worry about is Emeka Egbuka. And something that I think is kind of forgotten or not realized about Emeka and why I want him outside, he's actually, you know, he's a bigger receiver than Garrett Wilson, Zach.
Yeah, he is. He's 6'1", I think, right? He's got about an inch on him.
He's 6'1", and he's got about 10 pounds on him.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that people don't really realize that because he's kind of viewed as like a shiftier, smaller guy who's in the slot. But he is all of the makings of an outside guy. And I think I want to see him try to do some of the stuff that we saw from Garrett Wilson about getting Garrett Wilson in space, throwing some jump balls and letting him go get it. And that's what I'm really excited to see. I don't think he plays in the slot next year. I think he will be outside because I think slot is – I like having Jackson in the slot because I think he's super intelligent. And I think he really processes the game well, and he's never sped up by things, and he's able to kind of be a high-volume – pass catcher from the slot. I would like to see Emeka outside. And then I think Fleming is going to be the other outside guy, because earlier this year when guys were out, the guy who was plugged in first more times than not was Fleming. Still waiting for him to flash, but he's got all the freaky things you would want. Like, he's probably the fastest of the receivers that are still playing. Physically, he's a really, really big dude. He's probably the best blocker, maybe, or him or Marv is you know, good blockers. But I'm excited to see those guys. And then I'm really interested to see, there's like all the rumors about maybe Cade Stover going back to defense. I'm interested to see, I was interested to see if Jeremy Rucker would play. And then if he didn't play, I wanted to see if G. Scott would give X or Y or whatever at tight end. So I'm super curious. I'm interested to see. I think that the player that will have the breakout game, I think it will be either Fleming or Emeka. And I'm interested to see how C.J. Stroud does now that he doesn't have to get – he's not getting in the backpack of Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. Like, he's going to have to go out there and be a really good player. And sometimes I feel like he relied on a couple jump balls to some of those really good receivers, which is fine. And sometimes it was easy for him to throw to wide-open guys because guys were wide open by a wide margin. I mean, there was the clip of the coach of Maryland talking about – I mean, the receivers were so wide open, it looked like they were dropped out of airplanes. And maybe it won't be like that this time. He's going to have to really make some really good throws, which he has in the past. But for the most part of the season, I felt like there were long stretches where he was really getting bailed up by how open the receivers were.
Yeah, no doubt. And the other piece of this puzzle is we've seen Jackson Smith and Jigba, and his stock right now is very inflated, in my opinion. I think he's a really good player. But we've seen him as wide receiver three. And you're not going to see him.
You couldn't key in on him.
And now he's going to be wide receiver one. And that's a whole different ball of wax, a whole different ball game. And it's going to be interesting to see how he how he thrives, right? And I'm not here to say this Utah secondary is anything outstanding or anything where it's like, man, oh, he's going to struggle with this corner or this safety and coverage. I don't see that, but they're going to have face a whole different defensive game plan without Chris and Garrett out there. And I think this is a cool opportunity because one, Julian hasn't shown me anything to say he's going to be a starter next year. I know he was the fourth man up mostly because of experience. But this is an opportunity to find out. I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is right in the driver's seat as much as Julian Fleming for that other outside spot. I agree with you. I think Emeka Egbuka is the other outside receiver. And I honestly, if I'm being honest, I think he's the closest to a lock of the three to start next year.
I think he's the only one that I can see doing the things that Garrett's done.
Yeah, he's special. And I'm not saying the other two aren't special, but I really believe from what I've seen, he obviously got injured, so that didn't help. And this is all assuming he's fully healthy. I mean, from what I've heard, he is, and he's going to be 100% by the game. But he's one that has flashed. And you saw Chris Olave as a freshman flash. You saw Garrett Wilson as a freshman flash. You've never seen Julian Fleming flash. You've never really seen Marvin Harrison Jr. flash, albeit maybe because he hasn't had many opportunities, but Julian's had plenty of opportunities and you haven't seen him really flash. So I think Julian is a solid player that has a decent ceiling, but I think that Emeka has a much higher ceiling, and he's shown you those lightning moments already, right? On a kick return or in mop up duty or whatever it is, you've seen it where you go, ooh, I like this kid, right?
Yeah,
so that's like, ooh, wait a that's second. One side of the ball. The other side of the ball, I'm really really worried about because this defense has been awful all year. I've said it all year. I mean, I don't know how I'm almost, the horse is completely fucking dead and I'm still with a bat swinging it and beating it. I'm worried about it because they've had a month with a lame duck staff and we still don't know who is lame duck on the staff, but someone is, right? I mean, they're bringing in a new coordinator.
It's a dead man walking.
Someone got to go. And so there's going to be some checked outedness. There's going to be some issues and you hope that the guys that are staying or are hoping to stay, kind of maybe even auditioning to stay, you hope that they really turn their shit up. Like Al Washington has a big task at hand because he's the one coach on defense who has underperformed the most, in my opinion. And so I'm worried about this defense. I've been worried about them all year, and the announcement of Jim Knowles coming in doesn't make me feel better for this game. It makes me feel better for 2022, but I don't feel better about the Utah game at all.
Yeah, no, I'm extremely nervous. I'm nervous because I feel like for this Ohio State team to win, you may have to score 45, 50 points because of how bad the defense is. And it's going to be a little bit harder to score 45, 50 points when you're missing your two best players on offense. It's just how it is. And so you almost need these young guys to explode because they're going to have to kind of carry the load of the defense because the defense has been so bad. Now, on the flip side, I think that maybe, you know, maybe Haskell Garrett not being out there will force them to play Tylenol Williams. I mean, I hope it does.
Well, they have to, though, right?
Yeah,
they have to.
Yeah, they can't. He has to play more than four snaps, period. You hope on that. You hope he can be a game wrecker and wreak havoc when he's in there. But it's tough when you're, you know, looking for a freshman to wreak havoc to kind of blow up a game plan to cover up the back end stuff that you've become so bad at. And you're going to have to score 45 without your two best players on offense. And that scares me as an Ohio State fan, just straight up.
Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely does. But, you know, I'm excited to dive into the Utah film. Obviously, I don't need to watch
Clark Phillips, you know, was a former Buckeye commit. He's you know, playing cornerback for them.
And I didn't know.
Yeah, so it should be interesting because, like, who does he guard now? Do they move him in to go guard Jackson since the other two receivers are out? I am curious to see. He was a Jeff Hafley recruit, and then obviously Jeff Hafley took the BC job, and so he was like, F this, I'm going to Utah. And then Utah's Twitter trolled Ohio State.
Oh, I do remember that. I do remember that.
Yeah, just funny stuff. And Ohio State could have absolutely ended that one. Could have brought an AK-47 to a fist fight, but they chose not to.
Well, they got an opportunity right here on the field, right?
Yeah, they do on the field. I do want to talk NFL for a quick sec and something that Ross Fuller said that really, really, really bugged me. Holy shit, man. I'm in this group chat, this fantasy football group chat. Our fantasy football season just ended, and you're looking at the champions, Zach. I won the league. You know, I had Jalen Waddle go off last night and won by a hand.
But must be a weak ass league.
Oh, weak ass league. 14 kids all talk crazy to me every year, and we whooped all of them straight up. Straight up. Everybody from my hood, there's three of us. We've each won one of the years we've done this league. And people from the other hoods in Akron are garbage at fantasy football. And I'll put moms on that. Anyway.
We need to get you in the Menace to Sports fantasy next year, Chris. Because
Hold up. I like beating up on suckers. I don't want to play some real. I'll play some real cats, but I do enjoy beating up on suckers.
Come on, now, we got to do better. We got to level up and get you against a real comp here.
I am not a dog, Zach. I am a cat. I like it easy. I want to sleep all day. I want to kick it with the homies. I do not want competition.
You want to win the Capital One Bowl. You don't want to play in the Natty.
Straight up, University of Akron Potato Bowl champs 2018. That's how I'm living. That's how I'm feeling. But we always are in that group chat arguing about Baker Mayfield. I got all these Baker Mayfield apologists, and they're always telling me this. Well, this person's hurt. This person's hurt. This, that. And, you know, well, you didn't criticize Lamar Jackson for throwing four picks. You're not criticizing Baker Mayfield. Zach, I don't know what to say. Like, Baker Mayfield's not the answer for all Cleveland Browns fans. Like, I'm sorry. And if you want to know what a number one overall pick should look like and should flash like, it is Joe Burrow. See, these two number one overall picks are not created equal. They're not.
No.
And if you want to be number one overall pick, I'm sorry to say the idea of fairness goes out the window. Because as a number one overall pick, you are expected to carry a team through down years. You're expected to carry a team through situations that are not ideal. You're expected to carry a team when there are injuries to the offensive line or the receivers. That's just how it is, because when you get paid that much money, depth goes down after you get out of that rookie deal, and then you're expected to win no matter what. Like, yeah. Aaron Rodgers, nobody cared that when his offensive line was bad. It was like, all right, play better. Like, fuck, Eli Manning, like, he won two Super Bowls with some garbage teams. I mean, so just straight up, and it's time, Zach. It's time.
Well, you just look at the top of you, and I haven't done this, and it's probably something I need to do with this platform and expand into the NFL. It's just been such a college football centric show, but I love the NFL, especially. It's funny because as a college football coach, you never get to watch the NFL at all. Like maybe the second half of a Monday night football game if you get out of there early on a Monday, which rarely ever happens, or a Thursday night game. Honestly, Thursday night games was the only time that we got to watch anything because we were off after practice. So I've really fallen back in love with the NFL since I got out of coaching. And so I probably need to go there, but I was just kind of looking at it since you brought this up, and I have been, I was one of the biggest supporters of drafting Baker where the Browns drafting him as a Browns fan. I really liked him in college. Obviously hated him for the whole flag plant after we blew their doors off the year before. Thought that was a bitch move, but I got over it. It's like, whatever, you know, I kind of get it. If we did that somewhere else, you'd kind of be like, that was badass. Like, whatever, it is what it is. But I mean, I've officially jumped off the Baker bandwagon this year. I wanted to give him this year because of all the coordinator changes. He finally had Stefanski come in. He had a legit run game. He had stars at receiver. Like, this was the year, right? And you look at it and it's like, his NFL career is kind of playing out like his college career. Imagine that, right? Like flashes where you're like, damn, Baker balled out in this one game.
Like, damn, that's Baker
made this one great throw. But over his body of work, he didn't win shit. He didn't win a damn thing at Oklahoma. Mm-mm. Hadn't won a damn thing at the Browns. And you look at it right now, he's the 26th graded quarterback on Pro Football Focus. Like,
not ideal shit.
The quarterbacks that are starters that are behind him are Jared Goff, Justin Fields, who has no chance in Chicago, Taylor Heineke in Washington, Sam Darnold, who's awful, Ben Roethlisberger, who's about 4 years past retirement, Trevor Lawrence, who got Urban, Davis Mills at Houston, and then my favorite one, Zach Wilson, who everyone told me should have been drafted ahead of Justin Fields and did get drafted ahead of Justin Fields with the Jets, and he is just stinking it up. But you know who the number one quarterback on Pro Football Focus is as far as grade-wise, passing grade?
Who?
Jose Barrose himself, big dick energy, Joe Burrow, is the number one graded passer in the National Football League with the likes of Kyler Murray at 2, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott. Like, that is where the number one pick is supposed to be, right? In their, Joe Burrow's in his, second or third year?
Yep.
That's where they should be.
That's not what a number one overall pick looks like, supposed to look like.
And we're not talking about first year, like Justin Fields or Zach Wilson or Trevor Lawrence. Like, they're supposed to be at the bottom if they're playing their rookie year. But you get usually,
if you get drafted high, you go to a bad team. Straight.
Yeah, usually. And you get in year two, year three, you better be at the top of that, you know, the cream of the crop. You better be up there. I mean, you could be seventh. You can't be 27th. Like, you could be ninth. That's okay. You're still young. Josh Allen is 10th right now. Everybody's pleased with the Josh Allen pick in Buffalo, right?
Like Justin Herbert, same deal. Like, he's up there. You know, when they lose, it's acceptable because he shows you flashes. Like
Mac Jones, 13th, which I've said from the draft analysis last year, Mac Jones should be the first overall pick and Justin Fields should be right behind him. Or flip him. I was okay with either because you put Justin Fields in New England, it's a whole different fucking ballgame than the shit show in Chicago. So
straight up,
I just can't. I'll never. That's my only problem with trying to add the NFL to this show is I fucking despise it. I can't stand the people. They're so incompetent and they're so arrogant. It's the weirdest combination is these football coaches and these scouts and these analysts and GMs that are just absolute idiots and they're arrogant. It's one of the, I don't know if you went to high school and there was that kid that wasn't any good at football, but he was like a defunct starter because you had no one else and he walked around like he was king shit and you're like, bro, you're not any good. Like annoying when you combine arrogance with incompetence, and that is the mantra of the NFL.
We had one of those and he got our head coach fired.
I can't stand people that are like that, and that is the in vogue mentality and way of life of the NFL. That's the only reason I can't stand it is the people that think that they're great and run it. Because Joe Burrow was one of the greatest players that I've seen in college. I mean, he had the best year of a college quarterback I've ever seen, and that's what 15 years of studying the game, pretty damn hard. And so he rightfully should have been the number one overall pick. And then you go to this last draft class, and you're looking at it like, okay, I'm not saying Trevor shouldn't have been one. I mean, I could see that argument, but he was a project, and people don't like to say that because he didn't get coached at Clemson. He was raw as shit, and he was going into a situation. Then they hired a college head coach that didn't know how to develop a quarterback. He brought in a coordinator who obviously couldn't get an offense to go, and so it was a nightmare for Trevor Lawrence, and you're looking at it now like, damn, this is why where you get drafted is so huge, and you go look at this draft class of the guys that I recruited, like Garrett Wilson, Jameson Williams, Chris Olave, like, and you're looking at like, all right, where are they saying they're going to go? Cause all I want for the kids that I know, like the people that I care about and actually like want them to succeed because I know them. Mm-hmm. I just want them to go to the right fit. Like when Mike went to the Saints, it was beautiful.
Ecstatic.
Oh, I mean, just Corey Coleman gets drafted ahead of him, all these people. And I'm like, fuck yeah, get him off the board. Like, send his ass to Cleveland. Who gives a shit? And then Mike gets picked up by the Saints. And it's just like, you're elated. Because you're like, geez, he gets to play with Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram. Like, he is going to be a star because of the situation, right? Just like Mac Jones in New England. I mean, Mac Jones was handed a situation that was four times the advantageous situation that Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence was handed.
100%. 100%. But then additionally, as a quarterback, you have to show flashes of something. So like my issue with Baker Mayfield is that he doesn't show flashes of anything. And when you're mediocre, you do not get passes for having awful games. Like just straight up. Like when you show flashes of being really, really excellent, like I feel like Lamar Jackson has for years, like, you know, Lamar Jackson won an MVP, was phenomenal. He can get away with the four interception game because he's shown you flashes of greatness. The issue is when your quarterback isn't been anything other than mediocre, and then he's really bad. And then it's like, oh shit, what do we do? And then it's when your quarterback basically runs off coach, coordinator. And then it's like, well, the wide receiver core is like so garbage now. Well, wait a second. Like, it's partially because Baker Mayfield was no good and Odell Beckham Jr. was unhappy, and now Odell Beckham Jr. got out. So that's why the receiving core took a dip. So it's a little bit puzzling, and I'm wondering to see, first of all, will he get an extension? Because if a guy gets an extension, you're saying that we think he can win with less help, because that means when you pay a quarterback, you know, $30 million or whatever, that's less money to go around. So just straight up. So like usually the formula for Super Bowls as of late is getting a rookie quarterback and then building around them while they're on the rookie deal. Jared Goff made a Super Bowl when he was on his rookie deal because the Rams were able to spend a lot of money on other pieces, like straight up. And unless you're one of the generational guys, that tends to be the formula. Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl. He was on his rookie deal. They were able to spend a lot on pieces around him. Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl. Rookie deal. Was able to spend on pieces around. And when you pay that person for the future, you need to know that they can still win without the pieces around. And now we know for certain Baker Mayfield cannot win without the pieces around. I do want to flip to Joe Burrow, college Joe Burrow. Ross, this one's going to be your floor. Ross Fulton said that Urban Meyer doesn't get blamed enough for starting Dwayne Haskins over Joe Burrow, leading to Joe Burrow's transfer.
Who is Russ Fulton?
Isn't that buddy's name?
Oh, I don't. Well, anyways, Haskins over. So Urban Meyer should get blamed for starting Haskins over Joe Burrow. That was commentary. Well, that's just a person that doesn't know what they're talking about. Simple as that.
That's the film study guy. You know Ross Fulton, man.
Oh, from the Scoop.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad, Ross. I knew who that is. My bad. it's just somebody that doesn't know what they're talking about. I mean, it's hard to. I guess you forget. You tend to forget what was going on in 2017, 2018. I mean, Joe Burrow was a player in 2019. That'd be like me saying, like, how could you start Austin Mack over Garrett Wilson? And it's like, well, Garrett Wilson was a freshman. He wasn't Garrett Wilson yet, right? He was flashy. He showed flashes of being a really good player, but you can't, with hindsight, take a kid today and project that he should have started 4 years ago. That's just an idiot would have that take, right? Joe Burrow and everyone, any player, was wildly different 4 years ago than he is today. It's like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I'm here to tell you, I was on the inside. I watched them both. I understand football very well. I was very unbiased. I love Joe. I love Dwayne. I could give two shits left. They both were far better throwers than JT Barrett. You could have thrown either of them out there and I would have been happier than a pig in shit. I would just would have just been happy to have a great thrower, right? So I did not care at all. Dwayne was the better player. One, Dwayne was the better quarterback in that moment before Joe transferred. He was a slightly better player. That's not to say Joe wouldn't have been a better player in 4 months when the season started, but at that moment, Dwayne was slightly better and Joe was hurt. So he didn't get to show everybody entirely his body of work. And then Joe made a decision to transfer because Dwayne was slightly ahead of him. So how did Urban Meyer fuck that up? Mm-hmm. It's amazing how people in the media that don't have a clue what they're talking about will say something like that. It's like, huh? Why? Because Joe Brady comes in and Joe Burrow develops a shitload from 2018 to 2019, and he has a magical, ridiculously dominant year. Like, so he should have been the starter 2 years earlier? Like, what the fuck are we talking about?
And I want to add to it, because the quarterback production at Ohio State that time, I believe it was 50 touchdowns and 50 touchdowns, back-to-back years between running and throwing between Haskins and Fields. That's around 100 touchdowns. And LSU's quarterback production was 76 touchdowns in that two-year window. But keep going.
Yeah, Dwayne Haskins completed 70% of his passes that year for 50 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Like, I don't know what we're talking about. He was dominant in 2018.
And he was younger. He was younger. He had more years of eligibility.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. And it was really, really stupid take is all I can say. And I mean, Dwayne was the guy for 1 year. And I think that's the biggest problem is he should have come back, but he played so well. I mean, he's a first round draft pick. Like, what are we talking about? In 2018, Joe Burrow leaves LSU. He's not a first round draft pick. So Dwayne Haskins was the better quarterback in 2018. Like, this is just the dumbest take of dumb takes.
It's like you should almost play the worst player to guarantee they won't go to the draft earlier. And that way you can get them longer and get like that weird Kenny Pickett year where it's like overly dominant as a fifth year senior. Yeah. If Haskins stayed till his, you know, redshirt senior year, is there any passing record he wouldn't have?
No. I mean, and honestly, Justin Fields would have never come to Ohio State. So, I mean, it's one of those things that I guess it is what it is. Those are the takes you get when you have media people start talking football, I guess.
Yeah. I just thought it was such an asinine and crazy take because of all the variables going into it. Then he alluded to it being Urban Meyer's offense would have been, you know, more suited for a guy like Joe Burrow. But wasn't Ryan Day there at that time running the offense?
Yeah, 100% he was.
And how much say does the OC get and who's going to be the starting quarterback? Is it all the head coach? Is it like split decision?
It's a staff decision. I mean, the head coach has the final say, the offensive coordinator. Obviously, a guy like Ryan pretty much makes the call, and Urban would have to just like
sign off on it.
Completely disagree and cut Ryan's legs out from underneath him, which he wouldn't have done. But at that point, once Dwayne became the starter, it was Ryan was running the show and Urban was not. And that was by with intent. Like Urban knew that he couldn't run the show. His offense was archaic and it was time to move forward with a, you know, more up to date, let alone advanced scheme. Innovative, some could say. And so Ryan ran the show. So
So Ross, if you're going to blame someone, if you think it's somebody's fault, there you have it. Blame Ryan Day. Don't blame Urban Meyer. But regardless, just an absolutely garbage take, Zach.
Well, like I said, it's what happens when media people try to talk football. It's like, come on, come on, kids. Play nice in the sandbox.
My for fun fact of the day that you sent me, Notre Dame quarterbacks have lost 24 straight games in the NFL. Reason is because?
Because they went to Notre Dame. Notre Dame hasn't had great quarterbacks. They've had a bunch of inflated quarterbacks. DeShone Kizer being one. As a Browns fan, you're like,
what? One of your former high school teammates.
Oh, Brady Quinn, who I think was a really good player.
Yeah, he was.
You know, not knocking Brady. He was a great college player. Was another Browns quarterback that just, it's a shame that we go back to the situation thing, right? Like Ian Book had no chance in that game last night. But he also was not an NFL quarterback. People that listen to the show know that I've said that since he was playing at Notre Dame. DeShone Kizer wasn't. They just haven't had an NFL quarterback. I think Brady was by far the best one they've had, but he just got in a shitty situation, and then he couldn't get in the right situation, and then ended up fizzling out, and now he's killing it for Fox. So is what it is. But yeah, Notre Dame is, I guess, the school that quarterbacks go to die.
Yeah, but you know, if you hop on Twitter, it's Ohio State. That's where quarterbacks go to die.
Well, Ohio State's more hateable, I guess.
Yeah, super hateable. It's the color, I think.
Yeah, the color, the scarlet and gray.
Yeah, it's like a real villain color.
Yeah, right.
I think it was one of the Palmer brothers, whether it was, I think it was Carson, but he said his quarterback theory is this. At one time in the world, there's about 30 starting to good caliber NFL quarterbacks. But when they go to the NFL, about 10 of them are ruined by situation, leaving about 20 guys that are starter caliber. Brady Quinn was one of those guys that was absolutely, you know, a good quarterback, but went to the bloodbath that is that one third of the league that will manage to ruin a quarterback no matter what with the
Browns.
There's
no doubt.
And then there's 2% of quarterbacks that, despite situation, they're so great that they're able to kind of shine through. Maybe not as good as like a Hall of Fame guy, but a guy that's able to stick around and keep playing for a long time because they are really good on a really bad team. And I think he was talking about his time in Cincinnati is what he's referring to.
Yeah, and you look at it like Davis Mills, no business starting in the NFL. None.
Exactly.
No business. Taylor Heineke, no business starting in the NFL at
Poor
all.
Poor Terry, man. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you. Trevor Siemian, I guess because of injury, he's the starter, but he has no business starting in the NFL. I mean, you could go through it. And then you have, like you said, you have guys
Trevor Siemian's first start. You know what team he beat? The Browns.
Well, there you go.
Throwing bombs to Noah Fant. Right.
That is about right. And then you have guys like Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields that have no shot right now. And Joe Burrow was that guy last year. And the Bengals did an outstanding job surrounding him with pieces. And now look at him. He's leading the NFL in everything. So that's what you have to hope for a guy like Justin Fields, is that they get a coaching staff in there in a front office that is going to build around a really talented kid. And if they don't, you look at Alex Smith. Alex Smith was a complete bust with the 49ers. Complete bust. I mean, no chance. Then he goes to Kansas City with Andy Reid and is revamped and becomes a fucking dude until a guy named Patty Mahomes comes in. And Alex Smith was killing it in the league.
Right. Because number one overall picked ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. And because it was all because of situation, right? He goes to Kansas City, gets a good situation. He starts balling. You see it all the time in the NFL. That's why the league is, you can't always rely on a player's success in the NFL as the only underlying factor when situation has so much to do with it and politics.
Yeah. There's that crazy stat on Alex Smith that, like, the first half of the season before it gets cold, he's always in the MVP discussion. And then his name is nowhere to be found as soon as the temperature drops below a certain thing. It's one of my Reddit threads. He does so well early in the year, and then it starts getting cold, and he just can't hang, I guess.
I guess. He might send his ass to the Chargers or something, and he'd probably ball out.
Yeah, send him, you know, whenever, yeah, you know, somewhere in Texas, just send him somewhere. But, Zach, that's all I have for today. I'm glad that we were able to throw in some NFL conversation. And, obviously, as the show continues, we're going to keep doing NFL stuff. We're going to do a lot of draft stuff. After the playoffs end, we are going to do our Menace Awards, the only awards that actually fucking matter because we actually know our stuff.
The only ones that'll be based on merit and not bullshit. But yeah, I appreciate everyone tuning in. It feels good to be back, man. Menace in the Morning here live in studio. We are going
back.
We're back. So appreciate everybody tuning in. We got an episode coming out later today. Morning show the rest of the week. Another one on Thursday. Friday Spaces on Twitter. Come hang out at 3 o'clock. We will be out here. But Menace out.
Menace out.